This is a replay of the Wednesday night, August 5th, WGN show. We started right at 10. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call, and I hope you'll rectify that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday evenings from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593. My toll-free number from One VoIP for the best customer service and a great deal. It's One VoIP. Check them out at the number 1-VOIP.com. You'll be really glad you did. And here I am. Don't ask where I was, but it is a live show. It is Wednesday night, the 5th of August, and sorry about that. My fault. That's what I get for trying to rewire the studio before the show. Everything was working at my end, so I thought. So apologies for that. But we have 3 hours to spend together. I've got your requests. We'll play them and your phone calls as well. So if it's on your mind, it'll be on mine. 888-876-5593 is 8888. Raleigh. Oh, and all the fuss. I just lost whatever it was we were going to talk about. Not that that's necessarily a great loss, but I'll come up with something else unless you'd like to call. But yeah, usually Engineer Bob comes up with the absolute best tidbits. Don't know where he finds them, but he does. Oh, I did get some. What is that? Okay, so I don't know if you heard it, but I did. So I just got some sad news in the form of yet another AM bites the dust. No surprise there, because I think they filed to be dark a while ago. But KSFO, the old KSFO, it has different calls now, because of course they took the KSFO calls in San Francisco and put them on the KGO frequency 810, and did something else on KSFO. But now they're doing nothing at all because they have turned the license back into the FCC. Yeah, bigger they all are, harder they fall. And yeah, for those of us who remember Golden West Broadcasters, and KSFO in San Francisco was just a jewel from the 50s through, certainly through the 70s, probably through the early 80s. And it was just a wonderful radio station with a ton of great personalities. But hey, as time goes on, everything changes. And I have to bear in mind that the radio we loved only existed for a brief period of time when you get right down to it. We're really talking about the 1950s through, and then I'll let you decide where you want to cut it off, but say the 70s, the 80s, whatever. But that's just a scant few decades, no matter what. So, yeah, and I know 100 years ago there wasn't much on the air at all, to say the least. So the times, they are changing. And that's sad, especially for those of us who love to DX at night on AM. But the reality is that today there's probably more entertainment sources than ever. Whether or not you're entertained by them or want to hear them, that's another matter. But when we talk about things like the CC Wi-Fi 3, probably 100,000 different streams you can hear. So if you hunt hard enough, you probably find something you really do want to hear. But when it comes to terrestrial radio, I would say this regardless of if I was on it or not, but I think WGN is absolutely the best example of radio as it should be. I just heard it again. I don't know. Like I say, I don't know if you do, but nonetheless, I'll know if I'm talking to myself when we stop getting calls, but that hasn't happened yet. So Donna's in Beloit. Welcome to WGN Radio.
Raleigh, I'm glad you made it on the air tonight. That's good. I was wondering, because I usually listen to Landecker, and
yeah,
he was off, and I was like, okay, she should come on. I was munching some stuff in my car, and I thought I didn't quite catch, but you had some delay getting started tonight?
Yeah, I was wiring something earlier and didn't notice I did something else. So if there's no power to the DA, there's not me on the air. But of course, it sounded fine at my end, but apparently it wasn't going anywhere. So now it is, and we're back together.
Well, this is what the teeming millions all want to know. Did this involve a storage container that's really overheated?
No, it didn't involve any storage containers. I'm at the Scottsdale studio tonight, where there are no storage containers. I've just been redoing some KVM switches, and I prefer HDMI connections, but I can't have them everywhere due to equipment limitations. And so looking at adapters and other things, and just in the process, I brushed by power to the DA, and it was as simple as that. Off it went, and I didn't notice.
I'm sorry, but what's a DA?
That's a distribution amplifier. That's what that's what gets various parts of the audio to other parts of the audio.
Okay. Well, I run into this in wastewater. All kinds of instruments and things have different types of connectors, and trying to make things work, sometimes you have to splice something unique.
I would assume that it's much messier with wastewater. The cleanup there has got to be a bitch. You know, all I have to do is, you know, figure out how I wired it. I don't have to clean up the entire room.
Yeah. Well, I had a lot of fun listening last night. I'm chuckling, but you gave me credit for requesting that Marianne and the Hawaiian Orientals or something.
Oh, 1900 yesterday. It wasn't you?
That wasn't me, but it was an interesting story. Like, wow, that was an interesting, fascinating story.
Gee, you know, I should be better at writing down exactly who requests what, but somebody requested 1900 yesterday, I know, because I wouldn't play it on my own. But
okay.
It would never occur to me to play that, but there it was. Yes, 1900
okay.
Yesterday. That's a medley of Liz Damon's hit.
Yeah, well, I requested the Ray Charles Marianne Fisher song.
Yes,
and
okay.
And then the Loretta Lynn first
yes.
song that she did.
Yes, I've got Loretta Lynn. You will hear that. It wasn't actually the very first, but well, in a way it was. She wasn't even in Nashville at the point when she did that. It was on Zero Records, if you're ready
right.
for that. So this was before she got there. Now, it's interesting because I remember when that record came out about 1960. I looked at it, and it was like, I'm a honky Tonk Girl, and I thought, wow, is this going to be an answer to a Honky Tonk Girl? Because of course, you know, you had that with a couple people, Hank Thompson and then Johnny Cash. But the answer is no, it was absolutely not.
Like June Carter would not look at herself like that, probably.
No, you know, it was a, but yeah, 1954, Hank Thompson did have Honky Tonk Girl, but it is clearly not the same record.
Okay. In the area, just like, it's just been interesting. The Love's Park ice rink couldn't keep it up about a month and a half
yes,
ago. They closed
because yes,
they
right.
couldn't keep the ice going. So
right.
everybody had to move to Riverview. And Janesville is doing good with the hockey there and the new Woodman Center. That's been fun.
Yeah.
And I did a little trip and went fishing for a few days up north in the Upper Peninsula. That was really fun.
Good. And
yeah.
How you won and the mosquitoes lost, I hope?
It's not really mosquito season up there.
Really? Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah, there's a time when it really does magically kind of peter off. And I don't know why that is, but, you know, of course, everything that I normally do towards boundary waters is off limits. It's all closed till at least another month or two.
Right.
Because of all the fires, there is just so many. Oh. There's nothing going in or out. They completely closed off that whole region.
Do we know cause of those fires yet?
Yeah, I was wondering about that, too. I was wondering about that.
Reason I say that, of course, is Spokane is being devastated. I don't know if
yeah.
you've noticed, but it was something
oh, yeah.
like 64,000 homes evacuated, you know, just an effort. That's like half of it when you get right down to it. And that was absolutely human caused, intentionally human caused, much like
yeah.
what happened with Pacific Palisades. So,
exactly.
You know, that's just so beyond horrible. You know, I said, put them under the jail. So we'll see. But I didn't know what was going on with the Midwest fires, if we had a cause at all.
Well, they're really hard to get to. And I don't know. There's like 600 on the Canadian side alone or something about a month ago or a few weeks ago. So I don't know what to tell you, but mostly it's all the Canadians. It's all the Canadians.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right. And of course, they'll somehow blame us, you know that. And but you get down to it. And I think what they were saying was natural lightning strikes and severe drought.
True.
And that's possible. Of course it's possible.
Yeah.
But you hope there wasn't human activity. And when we say human activity, that can be accidental. That can be the idiot with the campfire, or it can
right.
be intentional. You know, either way, unacceptable and not an easy thing, to say the least.
Right. Well, I just wanted to say hi. And
I'm glad you did. It's always good to hear from you.
Yeah. Thank you so much. You have a great show. I'm going to be listening.
Yeah, I'll play your Loretta Lynn next.
Okay,
thanks.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate
Molly.
It. All right.
Good night.
So, indeed, right after this, Loretta Lynn and then Brian with a Y from Florida coming up on WGN Radio. WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Well, there it is, Zero Records, Honky Tonk Girl. That actually was the B-side to that. And to me, the story there is how they ever got it to number 14 on the U.S. charts. It was on Zero Records, and Zero had a distribution deal for Canada. It was a Vancouver label, and I think it was Spartan distributed their stuff. They didn't have anything for the States. So Loretta and her husband went around themselves to various radio stations and actually got this thing played. It wasn't the only thing she did on Zero. There were two others that didn't do anything, but the bottom line is Honky Tonk Girl, which again, that's the B-side, did so darn well that it caused her to get a deal on Decca. And yes, she wrote both sides. So that is the request. I mentioned that several other songs named Honky Tonk Girl, but probably the infamous one would be Hank Thompson, don't you think? 1954.
She's just a honky-tonk girl.
Well, there you have it. And it was re-released on ABC and I think somewhere in the 70s. But yeah, originally, of course, 1954, Hank Thompson and his Brazos Valley Boys. All right, so there you have it. Hank Thompson was great, very underrated in terms of among fans. But, you know, in the industry, of course, he was prolific at writing and other things. But yeah, I guess the last thing he did that I really, really liked was I see them. Don't tell me they're not there. All right. So let's see what Brian with a Y has to say for his bad self tonight. What's going on, Brian?
Serendipitous of you to mention 1954. Great year for McCarthy hearings and for births of the radioactive kid. Yours truly on Columbus Day under a full moon.
Well, there you go.
In October.
All right.
So, and I may sound younger than I am, but you've been sounding fantastic and sounding quite young. And I love the fact that recent photographs of you are just unavailable.
Lovely. Will remain unavailable as far as I'm concerned.
I think that's fantastic. Yeah. Dr. Laura, I got to look at nude pictures of. I'd rather look at no pictures of you other than the picture I keep in my mind.
Good.
When you're being radioactive. Keep up the great work, Ms. James. I want you to give a short history of Connell Rad. I remember when I was a kid, but before that, because I know you can do at least 15, probably 30 tremendous minutes on Connell Rad, let me get in a plug for my late partner who died on Hiroshima Day 11 years ago. And what was ironic about that, many ironic things, we had almost 10 years together, 10 great years, and on our first date, we both predicted how long we had to live, and she said, I don't think I've got 11 years, but I got more than 9, and she died 9.5 years later.
Wow.
And I wrote in 2009 when John Hughes, the director of the, you know, the teeny bopper movies, among other things, a very talented guy, when he died on Hiroshima Day, I wrote an essay and published it on the internet up there in Seattle. And she read it and was over the moon about it. I don't know if it was a full moon when she read it, but she was flipping out over it, saying, Brian, you're such a fantastic writer. I said, no, I'm really a talk radio guy, because she was the number one fan, as you might imagine.
Hang on a minute. Don't go away. I got the news. Hate to interrupt this, but we'll get to your dedication after this on WGN Radio.
Sometimes wonder why, with the shaggy hair, they sit and stare when my doggone bottle goes dry. Gonna have some fun, try to catch me one, so a sneaky doodled up behind. I said, alakadab, made a lightning grab, came up with a bottle of wine. I see them, don't tell me they're not there. I see them, everywhere. Well, a 9-foot spider winked at me, then tippy-toed right on by. She didn't even pause, and the reason because she was chasing the 30-pound fly. Well, an elephant pink crawled out of my sink and snuggled up on my bed. And a striped ape in a long black cape keeps a-tapping on the top of my head. I see them, don't tell me they're not there. I see them, everywhere.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. 1969 on Dot. Yeah, later in Hank Thompson's career, though, it was the follow-up to his last top five record, which was Smokey the Bar. Yeah, he had a lot of drinking songs, but of course a number of number one records in the early 50s, and of course Wild Side of Life, most notable, don't you know. All right, now before we get back to Brian here, and he's going to mention somebody who was dear in his life, let me say I got an email from Lisa in Dundee. Hi, Lisa, telling me the good news that Laura from Des Plaines is home from the hospital. So this is great. In her own bed, nothing beats it. But she still needs your prayers and mine too. Give her strength and all that. So if you would. Now, of course, I'm selfish. Not only is she a great caller, but she and Lisa, of course, give me all my 5x5 questions. So I doubly pray for Laura, but hopefully all is on the mend and she won't see the hospital again anytime soon. All right. Now, with that, back to Brian.
Hey, Raleigh, by the way, I don't want to hear Liz Damon do 1900 yesterday. I want to hear her cover Zager and Evans in the year 2525.
No, I'm not doing Time in Love either. No.
I was doing a tribute there to the late Marcy Fulton of Seattle. We were together nearly 10 years.
Wow.
And that's common law in Washington State. Met at a Seder underneath the Space Needle and fell in love instantly. I can put anybody in anybody's mind's eye her immediately with two words: Betty Boop. She was a dead ringer, had the hairdo, had the figure, had the cocktail dresses, and even had the squeaky voice. And every time I pointed this out, she'd say, quit calling me a cartoon. I said, well, you're so darn animated, just like yours truly. And she was the biggest fan of the Radioactive she didn't hear Radioactive Albuquerque, but when I got to Seattle, it was Radioactive Seattle on Cairo. I don't know if you ever heard the show. Tom Clinton Denning brought me to town, and I'm guessing you go back with Tom Denning
way
back.
Well, it's funny you mentioned Tom, because, of course, I ran into him when he said, come to Cairo. I said, there is no way. I tried for years to get to Pittsburgh. I told you I loved Pittsburgh. He said, I just thought you wanted a job. I said, I don't want to go to Seattle. I wanted to go to Pittsburgh. Go away. And that was the last time I saw him.
So, he hired Brian Stiebel instead. Yeah. Lucky for me. Hey, I got to tell you, I want to hear what you have to say. You tell your buddy Bob Crane, if he puts the old Conelrad triangle, 640 kilohertz and 1240 kilohertz, he puts it on a radio, I'll buy it just for nostalgia value and conversation value here in Miami. Love the show. Keep it up. And I can't wait to hear what you have to say about Conelrad.
All right. Thanks. Appreciate it, Brian. All right. Yeah. Tom Clendenning. I think of him often because he just didn't believe I wanted to go to Pittsburgh. He thought I was just trolling for a gig. When, no, are you kidding? Porky Chadwick and all the great oldies, and I'm going to Pittsburgh. No, well, he wasn't hiring me. And I always felt bad about that, especially when later, well, come to Seattle. No, don't been there, done that. All right, so to say the least. I hope he's doing well. I hope he's still with us, because I used to enjoy talking to him, even though he didn't bring me to Pittsburgh. All right, so Conelrad. Now, if you have an old radio, an old transistor or whatever, you'll notice the triangles at 640 and 1240. And here was the deal. This was Truman in 1951. And back then, of course, you know, World War II is not in the distant past, to say the least. And they're looking for a way, in the event that, you know, the ICBMs crest the pole, so to speak, that they would be able to share communications and not be located. That was always the trick. All right. So what they would do is they created these, well, they didn't create them, but they picked two frequencies, 640 and 1240. And then there were several stations, all right, that would be involved. And they would give the defense instructions and then shut off the radio transmission, so the next station in a daisy wheel would come on and give more instructions. So that way they couldn't be found. So the whole thing was designed to stop the Soviets from using radio beacons as directional navigation aids, not so much to bomb the radio stations, but to bomb the cities. And so that prevented commercial radio tracking. And what happened is non-participating stations would, during an alert, would have to go off the air completely. And then those who were the designated participating stations would shift their broadcasts absolutely to 640 or 1240, wherever they, you know, had been instructed to be. And from 1953 through 63, U.S. law required that every commercial radio, AM radio made, have these triangles, the triangle in a circle with the letter CD at 640 and at 1240. So the key station would toggle the transmitters off, and on a precise pattern, they broadcast 1,000 hertz tone, which would alert the regional relay stations before giving their instructions. But it was unwieldy, to say the least. But it wasn't unheard of, because, again, World War II was a big thing about not being able to be found through radio signals. So what happened is, of course, I mentioned the ICBMs. It was actually the ICBMs, I think, that killed it more than anything, because they needed something completely different at this point. They didn't need to just scramble radio signals. And so they discontinued in August of 63. They discontinued Conelrad and came up with EBS, and then later, of course, EAS. And so that's the way that worked. That was Conelrad. But for 10 years there, if you bought a radio, and if you've got some older radios, you'll see it. You'll see that signal. So that was what the deal was. And established 1951. But as I say, the radios didn't have to start having the little triangles until 53. And so that's the story of Conelrad. Any questions? All right. That was just, I know, a brief outline. There's much more involved, but should you wonder, feel free to ask. All right, Mike in Elmwood Park, welcome to WGN Radio.
How you doing? Riley, I got a couple of requests.
Yes.
One is Hilltop. P.S. I love you by the Hilltoppers.
Oh, okay. Yes, dear. I thought I'd drop a line. The weather's through the... Yeah. Was it dusty on the train? P.S. I love you. Yes. All right. So let me get my sheet.
How about Donna the Prima Donna by Dion?
Okay. First, I got to write your name down, or I'll forget that you wrote one of the Hilltoppers, since I confuse everybody, clearly. P.S. I love you. Okay. Donna the Prima Donna. Okay.
Yeah. And let's see. 16 Candles by The Cleft.
Okay. You got it.
Thank you.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Yeah,
you're
so I always kind of liked P.S. I Love You. In fact, you know, so many times when a record would come out, when I first saw the Beatles' P.S. I Love You, I thought, oh, it's a remake. Yeah, hardly. All right, so 888-876-5593. Of course, that wasn't the last time I got caught with that. Yeah, it actually was My Angel Baby, but on the cart that I had, it said Angel Baby. So, you know, there I am saying, it's a remake. Yeah, it wasn't. All right, so 888-876-5593-8888 Raleigh. And I don't know if I can convince Bob Crane to put some Conelrad signals on his radios. I don't even know if he could legally, but it is a neat idea, and that's what Bob Crane is all about, because like many of us, he was disgusted with radio reception, probably especially in the 80s. You know, when radios would come out, they'd have nice tone, they'd look good, but they didn't pick anything up worth a darn. And he said, I could do better. And he sure did. Everything that Bob Crane developed just made reception easier. Yeah, whether it was the select antenna or all these wonderful radios. And today, a ton of C. Crane radios, all of which have that commonality of great reception. And one of the best, as far as that goes, is the CC Radio 2E, which is just terrific. I always say, give it the litmus test. Take a standard radio, tune it into some weak AM station, and then take the CC Radio 2E, tune it to the same station, and it will sell itself. Not only will it pick up more than the standard radio, but high quality audio, and it just sounds terrific. It can be adjusted to whatever you want it to be. Of course, it has the emergency features like NOAA weather and alert, and even lets you monitor additional emergency communications and other communications with a 2-meter ham band, which is a lot of fun. It's got a dial light, it's got presets, it's got a clock and a timer and alarm, all the things that you would want to make it your bedside companion, which it is for me, actually. But what you'll really want is the amazing clarity that the 2E will pick up. Now, again, it's not magic. If there's no signal over your head, it's not going to suddenly pick one up. But if it's a case where there's a very weak signal in other radios, just, you hear it somewhere in the distance, you'll really hear it with the CC Radio 2E, I guarantee it. Now, if you go online, ccradio.com, you can see the catalog, great products and great information about products, which is really neat if you're a radio fan. But if you can't go online, you want to order by phone, you can do that. And if you got any questions and want to talk to somebody about it, you can do that too. 800-522-8863, 800-522-TUNE, ccradio.com. Look at the CC Radio 2E. You tell them Raleigh sent you from WGN Radio.
Oh,
WGN Radio. I'm Riley James. So there you have it. Someone the other day had mentioned, did Van McCoy do anything other than The Hustle? And I couldn't stop laughing because more prolific than maybe any other name when we're talking about the late 60s, early 70s soul stuff. And of course, he wrote and produced that, Brenda and the Tabulations. And it was on Top and Bottom Records. I don't even want to think. Jamie Guyton distributed it. They were a little Philadelphia label. It was actually founded by Brenda and the Tabulations, and well, Brenda anyway, and that was the deal there. It was Brenda Payton, and her manager wound up forming Top and Bottom. If you say what else was on Top and Bottom, well, I think you've just heard it. Actually, there were Oscar Weathers was on that label, but for the most part, Kevin Lassiter, trying to think of anybody else, but that might be it. But mostly Brenda and the Tabulations, and why not? And if you've got some distribution, you can do that. And indeed she did. So that was a request, and that was a request from Lisa, and she gave me a couple others, Lisa from Joliet. So yeah, Crying Tal and Switchboard Susan. So we'll get to that as well. So all right. 888-876-5593, 888-ROLLYE. And if it is on your mind, we'll make sure that it's on mine. And there was a couple things to talk about. This is, for whatever reason, this is a very slow night. So if you say, I never call because I never get in, well, you will now. That's all I can, yeah. Yeah, we might delve deeper into the history of Conrad. Who knows? Yeah, or not. But the interesting thing is not only engineer Bob, but James on the South Side sends me interesting articles, things that I have otherwise never ever thought about, like why do dogs tilt their heads? And you probably noticed that, and it's charming actually. You know, you're walking by and the dog kind of tilts their head, and you think it's questioning or whatever. And it's one of those things that people love it. So for a long time, scientists just called it cute. But then, of course, I guess somebody needed to do a PhD or whatever. Somebody had to research it, right? And what they found suggests interesting behaviors as far as cognition in dogs. The most straightforward explanation, of course, starts with the anatomy you'd expect. And since the muzzle sits directly in the line of sight, when a dog looks straight at your face, their snout partially blocks their view, particularly the lower half of your expression. So tilting the head shifts the snout out of the way and gives them a clearer look. Now, of course, you could say, well, they could look down or whatever, or up. Well, up wouldn't work, but down. Yeah. And psychologist Stanley Coren, who has written a number of books on this subject as far as this, probably more than anybody else, he has studied dogs and finds that the longer snouted breeds like greyhounds and German shepherds tilt their heads more often than the flat faced breeds like pugs. Why does this matter? Because dogs are remarkably good at reading human faces. They watch expressions, they watch your eyes, your mouth, to figure out your emotional state and to predict what happens next, yeah, especially if it's to them. But the head tilt isn't goofiness, it's your dog actively trying to see you better so they can understand you better. But vision's only part of the story. Also, it allows them to fine-tune their hearing. Their ear flaps partially cover their ear canal, so you can get it when you adjust the position of the head and the ears, obviously. It will help them lock onto the source of distance of a sound more accurately. When you say a word that your dog knows and loves, like walk or dinner, yeah, the tilt is them straining to catch every nuance of that because, of course, they want to walk or dinner. And however, since then, in the journal Animal Cognition, proving there is a journal for absolutely everything, that's right, it's not just asparagus today, had a 2021 study where they looked at gifted word learning dogs, a subset of dogs, mostly border collies, capable of memorizing the names of many specific toys. These dogs tilted their head 43% of the time when asked to retrieve a toy by name, compared to just 2% in the typical dog. And the tilt happens right at the moment of trying to match the spoken word to a visual memory. One gifted border collie, that was Whiskey, correctly retrieved 54 out of 59 named toys. Every time he heard a familiar word, his head went sideways, consistently to the same side, and session after session, months apart, he always found the toys. So dogs do have a preferred tilt direction, just like humans. I find this fascinating, actually. If a dog tilts left, they keep tilting left. And as far as we know, it has absolutely no political leanings whatsoever. And there's also a learned component. When a dog tilts their head and you respond with delight, yeah, laughing, cooing, handing them a treat, right? The dog learns that tilting their head produces good things. And behaviorists believe that that's why certain dogs tilt constantly. Others, of course, rarely tilt. So there you have the tilting facts as we know them. I know. It was not a burning question, but now that you've heard it, what can I tell you? I can tell you that we can talk to Nick in Baltimore. And Nick, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Yeah, here we are. How you doing, Wallet?
Well, if I've resorted to dogs tilting their head, not that well. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, right. Actually. Dogs are smart too.
Oh, they are. Yes, some.
Animals are smarter. I mean, they're smart, believe it or not. I mean, they really are.
They're more intuitive, I'll say that. You know, as far they're looking at cues that we ignore, since we can talk and all those things. And yes, their intuition, they know.
They know, yeah. And they also recognize tone.
Sure.
Or their voice, yeah. I know we got the break is coming up, so.
Well, we've got a couple minutes. We can start to preview our topic. What are we talking about?
I was going to get into the KXNT thing in Las Vegas.
Oh, yeah, I was just talking about KSFO, and yes, KXNT, I mean, they're dropping like flies.
Yeah, and I had a question about it when we get into it. You want to do it real fast, and then I'll hang up and listen, or
well, here, we'll start anyway. What you got?
Well, the only other talker there now is KMZQ. If you want to count the KDON sub channel, you know that.
Right.
Yeah, that's nothing.
Right.
But. Can KMZQ apply for either one of those frequencies, 720 or 840?
Yeah, you know, that's a very interesting question. I don't really know the answer, but a lot of people have been asking it recently because of that. Because obviously, 840 with the breakup of the clears, that was always WHAS's perch. You know, and they obviously got the frequency KVEG in 1986. You know, as far as that goes, what KVEG had been on like 1410, they jumped into 840, and obviously what a great signal. And so that's a great question. Normally, you know, it would be when the windows come up as they do it now. But that's a great idea, because I think there's a lot of people who might, for instance, be looking at that 560 in San Francisco, though the reason they turned on the license is they couldn't find anyone to sell it to. So, but it'll be interesting, because we wouldn't be talking about selling it. Yeah, I'll see what I can find during the news. I'll let you know.
All right. Hey, thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks. Appreciate it. And, oh, yes, I should say something, like we'll be back after the news on WGN Radio.
Just burn. Oh.
Upper upperclassmen, don't you know? And that was another request from Lisa in Joliet. She utters the underclassmen. So I don't know. I know it by the upperclassmen. Actually, that I know it at all is a minor miracle, but I always loved what the guys at Liberty did. And this was a sub-label for Liberty, Freedom. And Johnny Burnett, some of his stuff was on that. And there were a couple other people of note, but most of them are people you've flat out never heard of. Like the upperclassmen, don't you know? So there it was in its glory and splendor. And so, yeah, 1959. And no, I don't think it charted. And that was the flip side, by the way. The A side was Cha-Cha with the Zombies. Yeah, forgettable. All right, so we got one more for Lisa coming up, and we got plenty of room for you. But I answered Nick's question, well, to my satisfaction, off the air. I guess it would help if I answered it on the air. Yeah, it's sort of what I thought the case was, and I hate it. And that is that, yes, the license becomes available, but not immediately and not, you know, as by, you know, first come, first serve. It's a situation where it goes into the next window. And the next window might be a standard window or an auction window. It depends. But if it's a standard window, it's going to cost you about close to $4,700 to apply. And that's not all, though. If it's an auction window, of course, you're going to have to bid, but also you have a standard $5,350 application fee. Now, on top of that, if it's a directional antenna and the stations we're talking about most likely would be, that's an additional almost $1,500. And of course, then if you get the license, that's $755. So it's not like it was back in the good old days when you found a frequency, applied for it, and the FCC said, that'll be fine. Yeah, now, of course, costs you a pretty penny just to apply. And if you get it, of course, you have annual fees. So there you go. All right. I believe we've answered it to Nick's satisfaction, but if not, well, it's not to anybody's satisfaction. Wish it was the way it used to be. But so I would assume that 560 and 840 will both come back, respectively, San Francisco and Las Vegas, when there is another AM window. But I tried to check, and I don't find any AM windows scheduled, period. All right, so Fran and Austin, welcome to WGN Radio.
Oh, hey, Raleigh. It was the day from hell, and I'm glad it's over.
Oh, no. Well, I was going to say what went wrong. Maybe I should say what went right. But
well, what went right would be a much shorter conversation.
Yeah, that's it. That's what I figured.
No, it's, you know, it's nothing horrible. Just a bunch of things that stacked up. But the worst thing was I waited for well over an hour for Metro Access to come and take me to my physical therapy appointment. And they never showed up. And by the time they said, well, we can pick you up, or, you know, they kept, every time I called, they would tell me another time. Oh, they'll be here at, you know, 2:20. They'll be here at blah, blah, blah. And finally, when they told me, I said, I'm just going to cancel it because I'm going to be picked up on the other end at 4:00. I'm not going to have time to do anything. And if I get there too late, they probably won't see me anyway.
Yeah.
They would, but I was mad, and I said, well, thanks a lot. You just cost me $100-something for a missed...
Oh, God.
And then I said, I'm sorry, ma'am. I said, I know it's not your fault the bus is late. I'm just frustrated. She said, I understand. She said, I've heard worse than that. And I said, I'm sure you...
Yeah, I'm sure she has too. But that is downright unfortunate, especially when you made a reservation. It's a service they claim they'll provide, and then they don't.
Yeah, and it's been a lot better lately. So I really, you know, I think I've gotten they've done something with the system, and it's really weird because the drivers don't know what your window is.
Really,
they just get. They get, you know, go here, go there, and they don't really know what the exact window is. One of the drivers was trying to explain the system to me, and it's very interesting. But they've been pretty much, they're much better than they used to be, let's put it that way. But today I was just really, and then, of course, I'm annoyed by those darn buses.
Now,
you know,
did you try to call somebody today on that or no time?
I did not. No, I had no time, but I did not get the email. I was going to ask you about that.
You
didn't get an email on that. No.
Whoa. All right. Well, I sent it while we were on the air, and I won't blurt.
That's
your,
what I thought. So I looked for it right after the show.
Let me.
And then I looked. Yeah.
Let me look for it here, and I won't give your Earth 2.
No.
Is it Earth and the number 2, and then the last name?
Oh, you sent it to that one? Okay. Usually I use the other one, so I'll look at that one and see, because the Earth 2 is very clogged up.
Oh.
And so I usually send you messages from another.
Okay. Well, let me.
F-A...
Let me look. Let me see if I can forward this and look for the next one. Sometimes they just come up. Okay, 55.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. That's coming to you right now.
Great. Yeah. Oh, okay. I was wondering, because usually when I send you email, I send it from the 55.
No, I actually took it from what I thought was the most recent thing you sent to me, but I could be really wrong on that.
Well, of course, maybe I sent it to you from the email address by mistake. You never know, but I was wanting to do something about that, and I'm trying to figure out whether it would be better to, it would probably be better to write a letter.
Nothing wrong with both, because I have a feeling when you call, it's going to be frustration that you can add to the letter.
That's true. And I was thinking, okay, if I write the letter, should I start by, you know, saying something about I know how concerned they are about accessibility, blah blah, you know, and so forth like that. But some people tell me, well, a phone call isn't going to do you any good. You have to write a letter. But I don't know. I've always preferred to do phone calls myself, but I could write a letter if that would be more effective.
Interesting.
I was trying to figure out how to get a petition going, but unfortunately, since I don't play well with others,
right?
I'm not a member of any organizations or anything. I used to be when I was in Monterey. I was on the Disability Transit Advisory Board, and that was just such a bunch of BS that it was just. It drove me crazy, but I know they're having a meeting coming up, and maybe I'll plan to go to that and say something about, or try to say something about those ProMaster. I can't remember what they're called, ProMaster something. They're terrible. Whoever's idea this was to use those on Metro Access for disabled people needs to be shot.
So, is this the Ram ProMaster van? Is that what they're using?
I think it is. I don't know. It's a ProMaster. I don't know what.
Yeah,
It's got a big step in the front, and then towards the back. I don't know why this is, but it's got these two steep steps that are going up. And there's a pole, instead of being on the side where you can, you know, grab it and have some width of the on the stairs, it's right in the middle of the stairs, so it makes it very narrow. And the pole is more of a hindrance than it is a help to get down that step. And I know one time I had to ride, and they made me go to the back up to the top, and I was afraid to try to get down.
When you say the top of what? This isn't a double decker, is it?
No, it's not. That's why I can't figure out why, like, towards the back of the bus, there is this big step.
Now, wait a minute. In the middle, are there, like, two wheelchair seats?
I think so.
Yeah. And then in the back, they've got four across at the very back and then two right in front of that.
I think so,
Yeah,
and then they have these real narrow, the most uncomfortable seats. They're just straight up, you know, and they're very uncomfortable, and the seat belts try to choke you. it's like, you know, they must, I mean, I'm not huge, but I'm not little, and, you know.
Yeah, I'm looking at this. The Lone Star ProMaster is the only front-wheel drive full-size ADA van available in the market. Well, not too ADA for you.
No, no, definitely not. I mean, if you're looking at it and you can see those steps in that, it's like they described it as a stripper pole. I thought, I'm not going down the stripper pole.
Right, absolutely. Yeah.
And it's ridiculous, but anyway, I have just called the regular paratransit customer service line and said something about it, and sometimes I kind of can talk to the bus drivers when I'm going back and forth from somewhere, because they're, you know, when they're taking me to the door or something, I can ask them questions or say something about the buses or something like that. Although I know a lot of people that when I'm on the buses, oh man, I hate these buses, and I said, well, call them.
Well, here's one that says the center aisle vertical assist pole, known as the stanchion pole or grab rail, is a safety feature. Maybe not. So apparently,
no.
It's in a lot of the passenger and shuttle conversions. So.
Oh, it's ridiculous, because what it does is it cuts the stair, you know, like it makes it very narrow.
You know, I understand perfectly.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, it's useless. It's more of a hindrance than it is a help.
Right.
And, right. You know, but I got to use them, because that's.
Well, of course you do, but they have to make it accessible to you, period.
Yeah. Yeah. And one of the drivers is telling me the only way they're, and I said, well, what if I get a doctor's note? Because he said, well, you need to get a doctor's note.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, then what are they going to do? Am I going to be, you know, they do have buses that you step up, and those are fine. And they have these little vans that they're getting rid of that mm-hmm. are great. And they seem to be sending more and more of these ProMasters out. And I said, so if I tell them I can't use them, what, you know, that's going to limit my access to ride.
Right.
So, and I, you know, I don't know what good getting a doctor's note is going to do, but he tells me, well, you're going to call them and they're going to say, oh, thank you for your feedback. And, you know, that's the end of it.
So, just horrible. You know, I don't know anymore much about local television news, but is there any, you know, one of those consumer-type reporters who looks at things to discuss on the air?
I'll check it out. I haven't watched TV news
in
a while.
Yeah, find out if there's an advocate, somebody who part of their beat is being an advocate. You know, it's usually not going to be for ADA, but it could be. It's something that I think if I was doing that in Austin, I would love this story.
Somebody might, I'll check it out, because I don't have any qualms about going on there or telling them what I think of it.
Yeah.
You know, none whatsoever.
Well, and you can say it succinctly and in a way that is understandable, where for anybody who is disabled, they're going to encounter the same scenario. You're not alone.
Right. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's not just me. It's people in wheelchairs. Even they don't like it, because the ramp is kind of narrow, and I walk on it, and it's kind of flimsy.
Yeah.
Imagine.
Yeah, that's kind of scary.
Yeah, if I had a big wheelchair and I'm going down that steep ramp and it's kind of flimsy, I mean, I've heard some of the wheelchair, you know, customers say something about, because I'll get on the bus and I'll say, oh, God, I hate these buses.
Right.
I said, I know it's not, I'll tell the driver, I know it's not your fault, but I hate these buses.
Right.
And somebody invariably will say, oh, yeah, I hate them too, you know. And so I'm gonna carry the number around with me, and if they say they probably won't call, because most people will complain, right, but they won't do anything about it. But I've always kind of been one to do, you know, the squeaky wheel.
Right. So, well, no, I think this is great. And you will be speaking on behalf of a number of people who aren't taking the time to do it. So, you know, but in terms of the complaints, the steep ramps, the tight interior maneuverability, you know, the high step in heights, door and hardware constraints, those are common complaints to these. And there are modifications. There are dedicated low-floor buses. There are custom assist hardware. There's rear entry conversions, which changes things. So they can, but of course, as you say, they're looking for what's a budget. But in general, there's an entire Ram ProMaster forum for reduced mobility access. So you're not alone.
Okay, I got to find out everything I can. And on a totally different subject, what was that Barry Manilow song you played last night?
Sandra.
I've got to find that. That's amazing. I just can see that woman.
I know. Absolutely. And you know, I couldn't imagine why they released it as a single. It was great as an album cut.
I couldn't either. It's not something you want to play on a jukebox.
No, exactly. But you know, as an album cut, it was just terrific. She was doing the dishes when a glass fell and broke on the tile. She cut her wrist quite by mistake. It was real touch and go for a while. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I know you couldn't play the whole thing, but I've got to try and find it.
Yeah. I'm sure it's online.
Yeah, and I agree with you about that. Just because it's weird, because I used to love that one that you played for me, the request one. I used to love that one, and I hadn't heard it in years. And when I heard it last night, I'm going, that's not that great. My uncle loved that song, and he used to play it all the time. And I have an uncle that's really into, you know, doo-wop and stuff, and I would tell him about the show, but he's not up this late, and besides, if I told him about the show, I couldn't call anymore.
Right. Absolutely. You don't want to do that.
I'd have to change my name for the protection of whatever.
Oh, absolutely. But, a lot of that Lloyd Price was really good, but Pat and the Blenders was my favorite on that.
That was my next question. I remember it was something Blenders. Yeah. I was trying to see if I could find it.
Pat and the Blenders.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny we're talking about Barry Manilow, because the first time I ever called you the second time, because the first time I ever called you, you think you were on XM. But the second time I ever called you, you said, "Now, if people don't start calling, I'm going to play Barry Manilow."
Yeah.
And so I called and said, "Oh, here I am. Oh, please don't do that. Here I am. I'm calling."
Oh, yeah. I used to do that in Rockford a lot. I'd threaten people and, say, "I've got dozens more just like it." But I remember one that I played was the Concords, "Should I Cry," which is one of my favorite doo-wop records. And some guy actually called, "That's the best record I've ever heard." I thought, well, that's not the not the reaction I was looking for, but thanks for calling. Yeah,
that's why I like a lot of the music you play on Trivia Night.
Oh yeah,
because a lot of it's stuff I've never heard. I mean, yeah, I've gotten some of them right, but
Well, we're in the news. We did it again.
All right.
Talk to you later. Okay, bye.
Right, bye.
Thanks. All right, and after the news, we'll pick it up right there on WGN Radio.
Sweatspot Susan, won't you give me a line? Give me what you
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Nick Lowe. His album was Labor of Lust, but that was also a single as well. 1979 in Columbia. And Lisa from Joliet, that was her third of three. So happy to play that. 888-876-5593, 8888 Raleigh. I'm not sure that ever got any airplay. I was trying to think about that. I mentioned this last night. We missed National Ice Cream Day, Ice Cream Sandwich Day, I should say. And so I always, August 2nd every year, in case you're wondering. And I always wonder, though, who comes up with these things and who makes them official? Yeah, like are they everywhere? Is it an act of Congress? I can't imagine they're sitting there saying, and now we'll discuss National Sandwich Day. But then again, it might be better than whatever they are discussing. I don't know. So all things being equal. Yes, indeed. The history of the ice cream sandwich, in case you were wondering, goes back to about 1899, New York City, pushcart vendors. And yes, so that was the deal. The price is what mattered. It was a penny. And working class families and children could afford the treat. So, but the version that we grew up with, the soft, dark, chocolate-flavored wafer with the slab of vanilla ice cream in the middle, goes back to Pittsburgh in the mid-1940s. See, another reason I like Pittsburgh. Jerry Newberg was a concessionaire at Forbes Field, where the Pirates played at the time, generally credited with popularizing the modern soft wafer format in 1945, designed to survive being carried through the hot ballpark without shattering or melting or those kind of things. It caught on really, really quickly. But the origin of National Ice Cream Sandwich Day is not officially documented. And really, the fact that it is in August is an outlier because July is National Ice Cream Month. I don't know who came up with that either, but now you know all you didn't want to know about Ice Cream Sandwich Day. And we thank James on the South Side for suggesting it. All right, Robert in Chicago, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Thanks, Raleigh. I've got a couple of requests today.
Okay.
Tonight, rather.
Let's
yeah.
That's
for you. Oh, okay. First one is I Love You by the Volumes.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that was a good one. Okay. And let's see, I think this was done by Chuck Berry, Go, Go, Little Queenie.
Yeah, Little Queenie, absolutely. That's what it is, Little Queenie.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and then there was a third one. I just can't think of it at the moment. But those two definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right,
yeah.
Fine choices.
Okay.
All right, thanks.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Okay, take care now. Bye-bye.
So I'll try to be better at remembering who requested what. So right there I had written Robert Chicago. All right, so for those two, we'll hopefully get that right. 888-876-5593. If it's on your mind, it's on mine. You know, it's interesting. Some nights, just nonstop calls. At the end of the night, people are just hanging on. And other nights, not as often, but at least not lately, but just a vast wasteland, to paraphrase Newton B. Minow there, whose middle initial wasn't B, but that doesn't matter. We all use it. Long story. So in any event, wouldn't that be something worth probably a fortune if someone could figure out? Because it's not just, you know, whether it's radio station callers, same things like, you know, sometimes the restaurant is absolutely, you know, crowded with people waiting online. Other times, same restaurant, same time of day, absolutely nobody, just, you know, just you get a cannonball through it. I have no idea what causes. You know, I'm sure somebody will probably think it's an astrological, you know, manifestation or whatever. I don't know. But times of plenty, times of dearth, whatever. Fascinating to me to think about. So I was mentioning such as Ice Cream Sandwich Day. Chase's calendar of events every day of the year and the months. And they tell me what's going on for the various months or day as far as that goes. August 1st was National Mustard Day. there again. And it's annually the first Saturday in August, and probably the National Mustard Museum came up with that. But who do they talk to? Yeah, I have no idea. August is Read a Romance Month. No, I'd rather I didn't. Yeah, I realize that those romance novels just sell out the yin-yang, but I can't imagine reading them myself. Yeah, absolutely. Unless there's like a death in it and then it becomes a mystery. Now maybe I'll be interested, but, you know, usually that's not the subject. All right, so what else do we have of absolutely useless information? Well, August 1st was also World Wide Web anniversary, the creation of what became the World Wide Web. Well, it was suggested in 1990, Tim Berners-Lee, right, at CERN, the European Laboratory for Particle Physics in Switzerland, don't you know? And by October, they developed a prototype of browser, and they gave us HTML. We like them for that. And the URL, which we really like them for. And the first, unfortunately, graphical web browser that was Mosaic. Yeah, and that was not released till 1993. But in any event, by 1993, there were 50 web servers worldwide. Yeah, a pox on those who like those graphical user interfaces. That's what was wrong with Prodigy, which came out in the 80s, of course. Yeah, many of my friends couldn't communicate on it because, of course, they couldn't see it. So just wrong. It's also the yesterday, well, this week anyway, August 2nd, the anniversary of Iraq invading Kuwait in 1990. Yeah, that's hard to believe that is over 25 years ago. But indeed, yes, and nothing's changed. Nick is in Baltimore. Welcome back to WGN Radio. Thanks for saving me.
Hey. well, I just knocked everything on the floor, and I've got to pick everything up when we get off the phone. But okay. Anyway. Don't you just wish you could do something about gravity?
Oh, absolutely. You know, my favorite line, there is no gravity, the earth sucks. But yes, I do. About so many things. You know, like my real thing is I recognize, according to physicists, that time is only linear here on the earth plane. And for years, I've wanted to open the time store where somebody could go and buy an extra Tuesday or, you know, perhaps.
I was just going to say that.
Yeah, a discount on Saturday afternoons, 3 hours. I don't know why not, but
slow Sunday.
Yeah, that's absolutely. Yeah, get a slow Sunday. Sure, and that would make a nice gift too. That's what we need is the time store. But no one has figured that out yet. I know that was one of Art Bell's fascinations was time travel. He always wanted to go in some type of contraption that would take him to another point in time. Braver than I'd be as far as that goes. But the hell with going anywhere. Let's just move it around here where we get more of it when we want it and less of it when we don't.
I would just like to go back in time and avoid accidents, you know, like when I fell and broke my back.
Isn't that the truth? And then you wonder, it starts getting into the spiritual aspect of it too. But you wonder, could it be avoided? And if it was avoided, what would the outcome be? And that was another thing that I was curious about. You know, here on the Earth plane, of course, we learn the hard way. Literally, everything is literally by experiencing it. We look at our misery, and it's all that way, that grounded. Wouldn't it be interesting to have an existence where each time you came to a point where you had to make a choice, you took both directions, and that at the end of that lifetime, maybe you'd have 6,842 lines of life, if you will.
That's perfect.
Yeah, I would love to do that. You know, let me make both decisions each time, and it literally would be hundreds of thousands at the end of the life. Now, of course, you couldn't be in a corporeal state for that, I recognize, but I don't think the corporeal state is really, primo anyway. You know, when we talk about time or distance, you know, if we're not in possession of a body, they won't matter.
Right. But then you get into maybe it was meant to be like this.
Well, of course. Of course. That gets back to the accidents. You know, maybe that was unavoidable. And then you talked about, well, is it unavoidable because between lives you decided to set this up? Who knows? Anybody who thinks they have the answer is lying. You know, they have all those near-death experience shows, you know, where people talk about the other side. And I'm thinking, honey, you've only seen the demo version. You know, if you came back, you didn't get the full-flotted program. That's the demo version. Let's talk about what happens really. You know, nobody's come back. And that's a problem, too. No. Why is that? You know,
nobody's come back to tell me.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, exactly. All these people who are mediums who are talking about this. Well, if they can contact them, why can't the rest of us?
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a good question.
Yeah.
I told John when I called back, though, I was going to do the traveling thing again.
Okay.
And I'm fascinated with time zones, speaking of time, time zones and traveling, and I always ask you about Alaska. Hey, listen, you drove to Alaska.
Several times.
Okay. Well, how long does it take to...
Oh.
You went from the east to the...
Well, the first time I went from Nashville and in a Corvette, a 1975 Corvette. Yes, indeed. I did that. And, you know, I got up there there it is, the kind of the end of Alberta there where you run out of road. And I thought it was road construction. I didn't realize it was going to last 2,000 miles. But it did. And there are some notable places you can drive to and stop for the night, you know. So I've done that several times.
You can actually drive to Alaska.
Oh, easily. But now, where in Alaska? You can easily drive. It's actually easier to drive to Fairbanks. No, nobody would want to than it is to Anchorage. But yeah, you can drive to Anchorage. You can drive down the Kenai Peninsula and, go all the way down to Homer if you want. Or, you know, you can drive over to another number of places, include I had to go to Harp the last time, you know how that is. So you can drive over to Harp or whatever, and you can drive over to Valdez, but you cannot drive to Juneau. You got to get on a boat or fly it, you know, because there ain't no road.
Oh, yeah.
You're not going to go to Juneau. And years ago, the people in, I guess it was the early 70s, mid-70s, the people in Alaska voted to move the capital. And they were going to move it to, like, Wasilla or Willow, one of those two, near, not all that far from Anchorage. Well, the attorney general nullified the vote, saying people didn't understand what they were voting on. Because, of course, Juneau is, you know, only Alaska because we say it is. It's really hanging off, hanging off Canada there, way down there. And it should be on the mainland, as far as I'm concerned, you know. I'm not saying it has to be all the way up in Barrow or anything, but, you know, somewhere near Fairbanks would be okay. But it's not. So there's several. I'll tell you what else you cannot drive to. And if you're willing to fly or take a boat, is Sitka. And Sitka, they're still speaking Russian. And it looks it looks like you've gone to Russia. So, yeah, absolutely. Not, obviously not all, but they have their whole background was Russian. And I think the United States purchased Alaska in like 1867, but it was originally the capital of Russian America. It was a fur trading outpost or whatever. And, they had a big battle between the Russian immigrants and the indigenous Tlingit people. And all of that. And it still looks like you're in Russia of days gone by. So, yes.
Well, what time of year did you go?
Well, it's always summertime-ish. Earliest I've gone is early June, and latest I've gone was Labor Day.
Okay.
And, so you get your long days as far as that goes, pretty long. By Labor Day, they're getting a little shorter. But I've never, like, tried to do it in winter. You could.
But right now, it's getting long days.
Yeah, right now it'd be great time if you're going to go. This would be a perfect time to go. And, I've enjoyed it each time. It's a while, you know, give yourself a few weeks, give yourself about 5 days to get there, 5 days to get back, and then how much time are you going to spend driving around while you're there?
Yeah.
So, you know, I always say at least 3 weeks if you want to do it.
Yeah. You know what precipitated all of this with me?
No.
When we first got the internet and I first got into this internet radio jazz, you know, I immediately started looking up stations.
Uh-huh.
And I'm just fascinated with, you know, these are things I'll never, places I'll never be able to go to, or, you know, you'd never be able to pick these things up conventionally.
Uh-huh.
But I'm just fascinated with the distances, you know, the miles. When I was a kid, you know, my dad got me into shortwave, and I started doing that. And I was just fascinated with distances and long distance DXing, and I don't know. I guess I'm weird.
No, absolutely not. I almost went to Anchor. I almost went to KENI when they were on 550. They're on 650 now. But, yeah, I was going to go. And what it was, because I was smart, I said, you know, I know you'll move me there, but I'm only coming if you agree to move me back. And that they wouldn't do. So there was no way. I had too much stuff, you know, because when you put stuff on a moving band for Alaska, they put it on a barge. You know, it doesn't go up the Alcan. It doesn't go up the Alaska Highway. It goes by, you know, so it's sort of like when you go to Hawaii. It's like, oh, this is going to be a fortune. So yeah. I was like, you know, if you will let me, if you'll, you know, bring me back. And they wouldn't. So that was fine. But I almost did. And like I said, it was still at 550 then, but still a nice frequency. And it was tough.
So you were going to work there.
Yeah, I was. I was. I had, when I was much younger. Oh God, this. I was, you know, out of high school, but not much more. I, you know, had a subscription to Broadcasting Magazine and all this. And there was an ad for KSEW in Sitka. This is why I know about Sitka. And it was a non-commercial. It was like education, you know, like public radio or something. But I thought, won't that be interesting? Yes. God. So I decided I'd go check it out back when it was really cheap to fly anywhere. And yeah, I quickly learned why I didn't want to go to Sitka. But yeah, for a minute there, KSEW, those were the callers. I don't know if it's still there or not, but that was it. So I remember it so well. It was a 1400 AM KSEW. And I can't imagine it's still there, but maybe it is. So yeah, I was also, and they were the pleased as punch to have me. After all, I had a first class license and all that kind of stuff. But they shut it down, I think, not too many years later. So I think it's gone.
Let me ask you a question about that.
Yeah.
You talk about 1400 in Alaska, right?
Yeah, right.
Well, it was, in the old days, it was 1,000 day, 250 at night, right?
Right.
The Alaskan, did they have to go down, power down?
No.
As well, or did they allow them to stay?
Yeah, everybody I know was non-directional and full-time, you know, so I don't think there was ever a problem with that.
Yeah, who are you going to interfere with, you know?
Yeah, well, exactly, just each other. And then, and you know, the interesting thing about Anchorage, I had friends there who went to school there, is if you, let's say you were in high school and the high school team played football, mm-hmm. Well, the school had to have a plane, because other than playing a couple other schools in Anchorage, if you're going to play in Nome, for instance, you can't drive it, can't put them on a bus, so they'd fly them literally everywhere.
Wow.
And a lot of middle-class people had a plane, and especially the float planes, you know, land on the water. And that was very big.
Oh.
And so it was not unusual. You know, normally we think about your own plane that's reserved for the ultra-wealthy. Well, not in Anchorage, though. Or all of Alaska. Anchorage is actually really nice because there's nothing near it. So even though it's a small town, it operates like a very major city because it's a feeder city for everything, you know. If it were in the States, we'd say, oh, just another really small town. Well, for where it is, no, you even get a Nordstrom's. So it's kind of nice. But the idea of having a plane, well, yeah. And then the wealthier people sometimes had better planes, which was not necessarily to their advantage. I know the jets were called doctor killers because it was people who could afford to buy a jet but didn't know how to fly it. And there were notorious accidents there for people who didn't take the time to learn, you know, what they were handling there.
Well, I've never flown. I've never flown.
Well, maybe that's to your credit. So I don't mind flying privately, but I will never again fly commercially.
I've never flown. I won't.
Yeah, and you don't have to.
If I can't do this.
Yeah, right. You can't drive there.
If I can't get there by...
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know,
bus or car.
Right, absolutely. Forget. And if you really want, like, John really had his heart set on Honolulu, so he knew I wouldn't get on a commercial aircraft, and I didn't know anybody would fly me there privately, just for the heck of it. So, would you take a boat? I said, well, I guess. So we took a boat, you know, and it was all right. Just
the boat's all right.
Well, they're kind of time wasters. So hang on a minute. Don't go away. Stay where you are. Because I think I have another break before the news. So let's do this now on WGN Radio.
But I'd drop a line. The weather's cool. The folks are fine. I'm in bed each night at nine. P.S. I love. Yesterday we had some rain, but all in all, I can't complain. Was it dusty on the train? Yes, I love you. Right to the Browns just as soon as you're able. They came around to call. I burned a hole in the dining room table. And let me see, I guess that's all. Nothing else for me to say.
The Hilltoppers, featuring Jimmy Sacca, of course. Yeah, that voice. They're from Western Kentucky University in Bowling Green, just up the road from Nashville. And, of course, Dot was owned by Randy Wood in Gallatin, Tennessee, Randy's record shop. And so it was that he recorded them. And they were around a few years, but Jimmy Sacca actually made it. He was alive until about 10 years ago in Lexington, Kentucky. But I thought, they had a number of things, but I thought P.S. I Love You was just a great song. And that it was not an original for them, of course. That was a remake. I say, of course, because the original was like 1930-something, and it was Rudy Valley. But Johnny Mercer wrote it. A lot of other people along the way. But I thought the Hilltoppers hit was my particular fave. All right, so we're back to Nick in Baltimore. Sorry for the interruption.
That was a great tune.
Yeah, where else are you going to hear I burned a hole in the dining room table? So,
yeah. I wonder if those guys were, you know, these guys would record these stations, record these songs at these stations that were daytimers back in the day. I wonder if that was one of those situations.
Well, I don't think so as far as that song, because Randy Wood had heard them, and they formed together in 52 and signed them. So I'm pretty sure he would have taken them to a decent studio. But during their little run, I think Jimmy Sacca got drafted and was in Okinawa. And so they wound up recording a bunch of songs knowing he was going to be leaving, and one of them was P.S. I Love You. And so, but there were a ton of them. So my guess is that that Randy Wood just hurled him into a studio.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because they wanted to bank the goods, and then that was really it for them, actually.
Well, that's great music, though. Really, you play. I love your music. I don't care what you play. Whatever you play, it's always good. I mean, I'm really, and I'm sure the other listeners agree with that. But I wanted to touch on something. Go ahead.
I was going to say, it's also possible, since they were at Western Kentucky University, that they recorded it on campus. And I wouldn't be the least bit surprised about that part. But after Jimmy Sacca got back from the service, and the only reason I knew who he was, he went to work for Randy Wood as a promoter for Dot.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. All right.
Which
so,
is a big label.
Yeah. As we move on.
I have a real quick question. I'll get out of the way for other listeners, but I wanted to touch on these old soul stations.
Oh, yeah.
And Johnny plays
the air checks.
Great stuff.
Yeah,
on
he sure does.
Yeah. And that station down in Houston on 1430.
Yeah.
That was a fantastic sounding station.
Absolutely.
It's a shame there isn't much of that stuff around.
Well, that's the truth. Yeah, and that bothers me as well. KCOH was on 1430, and they were good. But, of course, KYOK, that OK group, I just love them. So, both of them, there were. Now, for the most part, most people who wound up owning stations that were going what we'd call soul or R&B in the 50s, it's because they were not great broadcasters. They couldn't make money doing anything else. So it was sort of like a last-ditch effort. So a lot of times they weren't owned by people who were particularly good at their craft, shall we say. But other times you had people who embraced it and got an entire chain out of it, the OK Group or Ronzaville. Those are two examples that always come to mind. And, in some ways they succeeded in spite of themselves. But in other ways, I wish that stuff was still available. Nobody thought to keep it.
Well, I always liked, believe it or not, I always liked WEBB.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
And if I had the equipment. Yeah, and I didn't have the equipment back in, the 60s or early 70s to record this stuff. I would have recorded that.
Well, I'm surprised that people didn't record things in the later 60s, early 70s, because cassettes came out in 64, that Norelco machine, and that changed the world. You know, before that, we were doing reel-to-reel recordings, usually on those old white Wolinseks and things like that, that Mom had in the kitchen or whatever. So there was less of that. But by the time cassettes came around, that's why you have so much top 40. But why we have such a dearth of soul, I don't know.
Yeah, I would have recorded. Had I had a tape record, I would have done it. I really would have done it. You know, one of our engineers, when I was at WBJC in Baltimore, the late Phil Hurd, he was a really fantastic guy. Loved Phil. And he's passed away now. But he worked at WEBB, and I'd known that. I mean, I would have been asking that guy so many questions.
Oh, sure.
Because, that was a, in fact, one of my managers at Social Security worked at EBB. She was a secretary, believe it or not. And, I always wondered, I always thought James Brown was gypped because I never understood why they were a daytimer. I understand they had to fit, they only could fit so many stations. I don't see why they couldn't have gone with 500 watts non-directional at night.
Yeah,
who are they going to bother?
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. But, I don't know that much about EBB. Obviously, James Brown had it for a while, and it was interesting. And, yes,
they had hot processing.
Yeah.
They really.
Yeah, that's 1360. And, I'm surprised, too, to an extent. I'm not sure.
Named after Chick Webb.
Right. Oh, yeah. You betcha.
That was a great station. I mean, and when James Brown, he would come to town every now and then.
No, absolutely he would. Yes, of course. No, he was somewhat of a hands-on owner.
Yeah, he would come in and he was on with the Moon Man, and he was, right. By the way, he's still around, and he's still on the air.
I love it. I love it. That's terrific.
Right. But, you know, they have those conversations on here. It was great. It was like you were getting inside information.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it was just great stuff.
Yeah, and when they would have those conversations, that's what's a real, real shame, that nobody went ahead and recorded that stuff. But yeah, that's interesting. Uh-huh. 1360 was kind of a busy dial position, but mm-hmm. and some stations did have 5,000 watts or whatever, like a WSAI would. But most of them, yeah, like Conneaut, Ohio, would have a 0.03 or whatever as far as wattage. So. Why?
Pottsville. I don't know. Pottsville was on there.
Yep, absolutely
Pottsville,
was.
Pottsville, PA.
Yeah. And
they're still there.
That's interesting. Well.
Yeah, I think there's sports now.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, and they were great. And, of course, WSID, for all the horrors of the Eatons and all that, still was, as far as I'm concerned, a magnificent station in spite of the Eatons.
You know what the original call letters of 92.3 were?
What?
WYOU when they signed on.
Oh, yeah. I think I did know that.
And they changed in 63, I think.
Yeah, I think I did. I think when I did the Baltimore profile, I came across that. Because I took every I took every frequency and wrote down what was on each of them.
Oh, okay.
So, Let me see if I can find that, actually, because I'm pretty sure I did a pretty thorough job on Baltimore. Yeah, and but I did that graph with every frequency and what was on it, and let's see if I come up with it. Not easily, I guess. So, let's see, World Radio History. Yeah, because he put them all up there, so. I don't have to bother to try and find my hard copies. But, all right, what's this? All right, here we are, Baltimore. Found it. All right, now where's my little graph? Used to love to do my graph. It's got to be here. Always did a graph. So maybe not. I thought I did a graph. I did for most markets. All right, maybe it's somewhere else. Let's see. Still checking. One moment. I have the tower. I have the tower. Oh, here we are. I was going to say I have the tower locations of everybody. All right. So 92.3.
Oh,
okay. Yeah, I've got YOU, but I actually had them signing on as SID, then going to YOU, then back to SID, then LPL, and then YST.
Yeah.
So it was SID twice.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it signed on as SID and then went to YOU and then back to SID.
Oh, so I was wrong.
Well, you were right. You were right that they were there, and very few people would remember them.
And you know, they used to it was weird because they used to sign off. They would come on at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon or something. When I first got an FM radio, a lot of these FM stations, people don't realize, but a lot of them would have weird sign-on times and.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody was 24 hours.
Right. Even nobody. Stations that could have been.
They weren't, yeah.
Yeah, right. But, yeah, that EBB, that originally was a couple of guys, Samuel Feldman and Leon Black, who signed that on. And Samuel Feldman used to work for ASCAP. And so that was the deal there. And, of course, there it was daytimers competing with daytimers. And I think that was like 1955. And then it was the next owner was Howard Fisher. He got it in 67. And, then James Brown got it in 70. And he held it until 79. And then Dorothy Brunson, of course. So... Yeah,
but I remember them signing on with Priest. I know we've talked about this before. I remember them signing on with Priest Sunrise with the full 5,000 watts.
Yeah.
And it was pitch black outside.
Right, right. And you'd think that if there was a prohibition on them doing it, that they couldn't do it then. But, there you have it.
They because it was wild. Because I used to get... That's the thing that kept me sane, Wally, because I hated school. I hated elementary school because some of the teachers were really, but anyway. But they never understood me, and I didn't want to understand them.
Right.
The thing that kept me sane was the radio, and I used to get up at like 4 o'clock in the morning, and I'd DX. And that's what would put me in a good mood for school. And in fact, that's what made me a better student, because I started thinking of, I used to be getting more proficient in math, and because I would take things apart and put them together and learn about the values of resistors and stuff. But anyway.
What's interesting about what you're saying is that if things were taught in a way that were relatable to kids.
Right.
And the real failing is starting with arithmetic and then mathematics, is that stuff should absolutely be enticing, but it is taught in such a way that it is just rote memorization or what have you, without any consciousness of why you're doing it. So
it was back in the late 60s, early 60s, mid 60s, late 60s. It was more like a punishment. They would always
They were fooling around with it then too, with new math, where they taught you how to turn everything into base five and all that. That was a crazy time. Yeah.
But if they would have just, because I remember, because I would be fooling around with this stuff, and one of the kids would say, "Hey," he would read a story. "Oh, that's like Nicky. He put stuff together." We don't really believe him because he's a liar. Uh-huh. Can you imagine a teacher saying that?
Yeah, I do.
And I couldn't say anything, because back then you didn't talk back to anybody.
Right.
But the radio kept me sane. I just went back home and started working on I had my workbench and I said, "The heck with it, I'm just gonna do my thing."
Yeah, you're not alone.
I think
that it was for many people. And as we've also talked, it was a wonderful shared activity for people, especially young people back then, because every kid was listening to the same night jock. They get to school the next day, they all had the same experience. And of course, I mourn that passing, because there was nothing like it before and there's been nothing like it since.
No, and you talked about shared experience, and that's what it was.
Yeah,
But it's worked out for me. It really has. I had a good life, Still do have a good life.
Yeah.
I mean, I really am blessed with who I've met and, I've talked to you and, I feel like we know each other. I've never, in person, but I mean, there's a connection. I'm very happy with, I made it work out, as bad as things were at times, but, it's fun, and there's always something to look forward to. And that's why my main point about all this before I go, there's always something, life is worth living, and there's always something to look forward to. And that's my philosophy in life.
Well, no, it's a good one. And the other thing too, I know you do, but to always keep in mind, is life can turn on a dime. So no matter how bad it is, the next day may be wonderful. And of course, while it's so wonderful, the next day may be awful. You don't know. So you've got to enjoy it while you got it.
Right. Exactly. Well, thank you for your time.
All right. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it.
Hope I didn't bore everybody.
No, I'm always good to hear from you. Thank you, Nick.
All right. Thanks.
So let's see. We're going to talk about a number of things, including the Blue Lake label. Oh, loved it. That was Al Benson, don't you know? All right. We got Victor. We got James. We got Gary, Stan. And, I'd say there's a line available for you, but I think we'll probably wrap it up right there on WGN Radio.
My love must be a kind of blind love. See anyone but you.
Shabam shabam. Shabam shabam. Shabam shabam. Shabam shabam.
Shabam shabam. Are the stars us out tonight. I don't know if it's cloudy or bright. I only have eyes for you, dear. The moon may be high, but I can't see a thing in the sky. I only have eyes
Chicago group, of course, and on several Chicago labels before that, don't you know? Chance for one of them, Parrot. I'm trying to think what else. There were other, of course, Checker, notably, to say the least. And then they do some stuff on Decca as well, but End, that was a hit on End. All right, so George Goldner's label, of course, 888-876-5593. Now, the reason I played it is because Elizabeth and Dalton, I see it on the screen, it says, I only have eyes for you. So was that your request?
Hi, Raleigh. Yes, it was. You made me so happy.
Oh, good. You know, did you know over 650 people recorded that?
You know, I did not. It's such a beautiful tune, though, that it doesn't surprise me. Yeah. I think it really captures love at first sight.
Oh, yeah, and they did, as far as I'm concerned, the best version. But originally it was 1934, a guy named Dick Powell. But then later on, all the names you would know and I would know recorded it. But, man, I'll tell you, everybody from, you know, Lloyd Price to Tommy Sands. But when the Flamingos did it in May of 59, it just knocked it out of the park.
I love it. You know, I wasn't sure if it was the Five Satins or the Flamingos, so thank you.
Sure.
I think it's the Flamingos. Yeah,
yep.
And... But I just feel so connected to it, because of A Bronx Tale. Have you ever seen that movie?
No, I've seen about five movies in my life. I'm aware it exists, but that's about it.
It's such a great moment. The main character is like in a high school and he sees the girl of his dreams, uh-huh. And they like played that, and it always hits me and like it stops me dead in my tracks. I always think that it grasps it so well, like that young love or just love in general, and then the doo-wop.
Yeah.
Of the 1950s or
59 on that. You betcha. And any movie that would have I Only Have Eyes for You, I like it already.
Oh yeah. And I always liked how I hear stories of doo-woppers on street corners used to sing to the girls walking by. It reminisces of a different time, like a simple time. I didn't get to experience that, but I love that element of people coming together and crooning or singing and sharing, you know.
Well, the best was looking for that echo. Bathrooms were wonderful, stairwells, you know, anywhere you could find where you could get that echo.
Les Paul talked about that, how he used to record Mary Ford in the bathroom.
Yeah.
And to give her that signature sound.
Right, the acoustics, sure.
And then he would, like, triple-double her voice. That's how they got their iconic sound.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But yeah, all those groups, they were always looking for the nearest bathroom or stairwell or something. And there were a ton of them. And, you know, I looked up to see what the soundtrack was on the movie. I Wonder Why, Dion and the Belmonts. Dion definitely was one of those guys. For Your Precious Love, Jerry Butler, all right. And the Cleftones, Little Girl of Mine. And, Aaron Neville. And then we get to the Jimi Hendrix Experience. Oh, well. So
They just named the street after him in New York, right in front of Electric Lady Studios, I think like 2 months ago.
Oh, good. Good. Yeah. I'll bet you he never expected that.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm delighted you called. I'm glad I played your record, and call me again soon.
Oh, well, it's so good to talk to you, and you have a beautiful night, and thank you.
Appreciate it. Okay, bye. All right, so how nice. Good to talk to Elizabeth. Now, what are we doing? Oh, we're going to talk about the Blue Leg Label. Let's stay with Chicago for a moment. Stan and Dearborn, how's it going, Stan?
Hi, Raleigh.
Yeah, how are you?
Fine tune. Yeah. The Flamingos, wow, fine tune.
They just nailed it. I mean, so many people did that song, but there was something haunting about the Flamingos version. I mentioned the bathrooms because it almost sounded like they did it in one.
Well, you know what? You're So Fine by the Falcons. That's what they did with the lead singer on that.
They
put him in a bathroom to a microphone over the wall for him.
Well, sure, nothing like tile.
Yeah, I thought he got that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and the Flamingos, like you said, they were on the Parrot label.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you for playing All I Want by the Five Chances off the Blue Lake label.
Oh, absolutely. And I have another one of yours coming up next. And let me tell you which one it is as far as that goes. I believe that it'll be Mambo Fiesta, the Calves.
Okay. And the Blue Lake was part of Parrot Records. And I think when you played it last night, it didn't come to your mind that Al Benson was...
No, it didn't right away, but you're absolutely right. Al Benson, who, of course, was actually Arthur Leaner, but they wouldn't let him sell commercials if he was going to be a preacher, so he became Al Benson.
And I guess he was on a radio, too.
Well, that's what I mean. That's what it was. He had a radio show, and he was he was originally a preacher, and he was preaching on the radio and all that, but he'd sell time. And they said, no, you can't. If you're going to do religion, you can't sell time. He said, okay, then I'm Al Benson. And there came the music.
And then he had the Parrot Club, where he had shows going on. He was a promoter,
sure,
a DJ, and but he wasn't too good of a distributor because I was reading that a Detroit group, the Fascinators, had a record out, and they came from Detroit. They went to Chicago to record for them. And when they came back to Detroit, they called them up. They said, well, our record's not here. And he said, well, we didn't send it yet. Come on and get some for you and take it back with you.
Yeah, right.
He gave them a truck. He gave the Fascinators a truck full of records to bring back to Detroit.
No, that's not surprising at all. Now, some of the stuff, he got a deal ultimately with Chess, and the Chess brothers distributed their stuff, which was good. But he was on WGES when they gave him that ultimatum that, you know, you can't sell this time as a preacher. And so
1990, that's right.
Yeah.
I read that, wrote it down, 1390.
Yeah.
And speaking of the labels, did you get a chance to review any of the Checkmate label songs?
No.
We're talking about Checkmate label.
Yes.
It was part of Chess and Billy Davis.
Yes.
Ran it. It was Chess owned it, but it was based in Detroit, and Billy Davis ran it.
It was like,
I don't know,
Lamont Anthony. David Ruffin was on that label, but the Delphi's, not all that much, but yeah.
I would highly recommend the Reuben Fort song.
Okay.
I'll Do the Best I Can.
Okay.
And that's got Beans Bowles.
Yeah,
playing flute on that.
62. Absolutely, 62. Yeah, and Reuben was R-U-B-I-E-N, so I didn't know if it was Reuben or Rubian or what.
I've heard, Murphy said his name was Reuben.
Okay.
So I go with Murphy.
Yeah.
They just put the I in incorrectly, or maybe that's the way he spelled it, but they always called him Reuben.
Yeah, makes sense to me.
He was with the Voice Masters, I believe.
Okay.
And the Lamont Anthony record is real good.
Right.
The David Ruffin ones are.
Like Mr.
And
Bus Driver.
Pretty good.
Yeah. The Seminoles.
Yeah, the Seminoles had a lead singer named Joey Finazzo, and he could sing a song and sound just like Jackie Wilson.
Oh, interesting.
he was a like kind of a, you know, local guy that was a Jackie Wilson. You know, we would copy Jackie Wilson.
All right.
And I heard you and Johnny talking about Jackie Wilson.
Yeah.
A couple nights ago or last night, and he performed at my high school.
Really?
Yeah.
What year?
In, 1959, St. Alphonsus High School.
Well, Germany. My God, he was already having hits.
Yeah, he was already. I think he was doing it when I am the man.
I loved that song.
Or am I the man? Yeah. Am I the man?
That's
he already had
one of my all-time faves. Yeah. Well, yeah. Now, so who at your high school had connections? Because normally Jackie Wilson doesn't show up.
Yeah. Well, it was my a guy I went to school with Don. His brother, his older brother, was saw him there.
Okay.
And because he graduated in 59, and we graduated in 66. They were a little bit older. We couldn't get in.
Right.
We were too young.
Right.
But, yeah, they... And then on the next year, we had the Shirelles there.
Oh, wow. And that was early for them. Now, when you say next year, you don't mean next 59. You mean like 67, like when you were there, 66?
No. No, the 1960.
1960. Okay, yeah. That was early for the Shirelles.
Yeah. So we had a Jackie Wilson one year and then a Shirelles the next year.
Not bad.
And then, I don't know, when we got into high school, all the connections stopped.
Yeah.
We didn't get anybody there. But we had a lot of sock hops at different schools around the area we'd go to on Friday night and Saturday night.
Sure.
I guess our school, our gym wasn't big enough.
Yeah.
they started going to other schools.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah. So, and then I didn't hear you guys say anything about Jackie Wilson being with Billy Warden and Domino's taking over for Clyde McFadder.
Oh, absolutely he did. And yes, he was not a big Billy Ward fan as far as that goes. Yeah. Yeah, no, Billy.
He had a lot of good tunes with Billy Ward and Domino's.
Absolutely. But, you know, working for Billy Ward, you know, what a taskmaster. You know, people did not like that job.
Yeah. But they had three of the greatest tenors, singers of in the 50s with Clyde McFadder and Jackie Wilson. And who was the third guy that sang later in the 50s?
Wilson Pickett?
No, the guy from the Larks.
Oh, yes.
Eugene Mumford.
Yes, Gene Mumford. Loved him.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And obviously, Billy knew what he was doing. He knew who to get and what to get out of him, but people did not enjoy the process.
So I was hoping with Johnny, with his research for Jackie Wilson, you'll mention his work with the Dominoes. Cause
oh, I'm sure he will.
Really good records with You Can't Keep a Good Man Down and Wait Until the Real Thing Comes Along and Rags to Riches.
Yeah.
St. Louis Blues, Above Jacob's Ladder, St. Teresa of the Roses.
Right.
A different label, though.
Right.
I think. And, some of my... couple favorites of my Jackie Wilson favorites that haven't been played too long, you don't hear them very often, was I'm So Lonely.
Okay.
1965.
All right.
On Brunswick. Well, these are all on Brunswick.
Right.
And Just Can't Help It.
Uh-huh.
From 1962. Had a famous bass singer in there, a gospel bass singer. And I'm trying to think of his name. I think it might have been like, it was a famous name, like Jimmy Rogers.
Right. No, it wasn't that. But yeah.
And I'm trying to think of his name that you would think of him as a different person, but it's got the same name, but different person.
Yeah.
Name. And I can't think of it across my hand.
I think it was Jimmy Jones, but not the Jimmy Jones we know.
Yeah, it could be. It was a famous name like that.
Yeah, I think it was
great,
Jimmy
great
Jones.
From gospel. Yeah.
Right, because this Jimmy Jones had been with the Dixie Hummingbirds before.
Yep, okay, that's it.
Okay, that's Jimmy Jones, yep.
I think Dixie Hummingbirds, that rings a bell.
Yep.
And Arlene Smith of the Chantels, I thought she had a powerful, clear voice. I think... You know, even though some of their records were were right. pretty...
Yeah, songs were mediocre. But, you know, it's interesting. I was saying the other night, she was one of those, you loved her or you hated her, but no one could deny that she cut through when she was on the radio, when a song came on the radio. There was nothing like her. She was absolutely had it going on. Like I say, maybe you liked her, maybe you didn't, but no one could say that she wasn't original.
Yeah, she's one of my favorite female vocalists.
Yeah. And she wrote the stuff. Didn't always get writer's credit, yeah. but she wrote the stuff.
You know, like you say, Baby and a couple of them were very popular, but I like the Crows record that they did, I Love You So. And,
oh, right. Right, that is a good record.
I love their version of it.
Yeah.
And but I didn't care for Annette Smith, who took over for A Look of My Eyes.
Right.
Yeah, I didn't care for the Chantels after that.
Well, they weren't around much after that. Just that one on Cub, and that was it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. And speaking of echoes, when we were talking about acapellas, I forgot to mention royalty of acapella, the Persuasions.
Oh, okay. Yes. Yes.
They still ain't got no band.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. All right. Well, good good deal. I really appreciate the call, and Mambo Fiesta is next.
Oh, okay. Well, thanks, Raleigh.
Right. Thanks. Thanks for calling.
Great show.
Thanks.
Yeah,
appreciate
thank
it. You. Yeah. Hey, and the Persuasions, we got to do that some night there from Brooklyn originally, I think. All right. So let's do this, and then we'll get back to Gary and Victor and James on WGN Radio. WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Yes, the Calves and Mambo Fiesta. And Zeke, the lead singer, wrote that, Zeke Brown. And a fine choice it was on Stan's behalf. And that, of course, was, as we talked before, on Cobra, 1958. All right, so we have Gary and Austin. Welcome back to WGN Radio. Gary.
Well, hey, Raleigh, I was going to talk about time, but we don't have enough time for that.
Well, that's why we have tomorrow night, three big hours.
I did want to make a comment about some stuff Nick was talking about, and that is, he was talking about KCOH, KYOK.
Yeah.
And the thing that amazed me about those stations, I never really heard KCOH very much or KYOK that much either, but I could get them at night in Dallas sometimes. But you really wanted to have to listen to
right.
them. But the thing was that KCOH was a daytimer, so I think sometime in the 70s, and it was amazing how successful they were just being a daytimer. And KYOK was, 24/7. So it always amazed me that they were able to hang in there.
Oh, absolutely. They were good. Okay. They had Gigi Hill and a bunch of other things too going on. So absolutely. And KYOK was a good radio station as well. But
yeah.
No doubt about
yeah, they
it.
Were.
But yeah. Now you know at that moment in time, if there was somebody fully covering Houston on FM doing that, I could see some competition. But the point is, nobody really did that. Not the way they did.
Yeah. No, they didn't.
It was always
KFM, but they didn't have. They were listenable,
right?
But they weren't that great a signal, but,
right?
They were certainly very listenable, and you know, but yeah, no, those are great stations.
I think so too.
Plays a fair check.
You know, I always used to say that was a time where the disc jockeys rapped, the music didn't, you know. And,
yeah, right.
But
yeah.
there were so many just great jocks that no one is ever going to hear because there were just no air checks. You know, some of them, yes, made a name for themselves, and we have a, but for everyone we know, there's probably three we don't, and it just breaks my heart.
Oh, yeah, I know. You know, I was trying to look up some of the people on KNOK.
Right.
And when I went to Wikipedia to do it, they didn't I couldn't get the right search criteria in there. It's talking about somebody 1240 in Nashville. I can't remember what that, I don't know who that was.
Right.
But I didn't even hear those call letters in there. You know, like,
right. No,
yeah, looking for KNOK.
Yeah, they'd say, oh, you mean KNOX? No, I mean KNOK. Yes, in Dallas. Yes,
yeah.
970.
Yeah,
right. I'll take 970. I'll take 790. Right. All
right.
So, maybe if I look for it when they were KWBC, I don't know.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
KX.
But,
they
had Blues at Sunrise with J. Dean McLean. And so,
yeah, right.
But there were a number, and I can pull that name out of the ether, but there were a number of others that, you know, I don't even remember them. I sure would like to hear that.
Curtis Pierce was over there.
Okay.
I remember him from there. He did afternoons. I was trying to remember. I'm just, you know, it's been so many years since, you know, I've
heard
them, that it's just hard to remember all those people. And I've been trying to look them up. It's just really frustrating.
It's just like, don't ask AI about, you know, soul or 50s R&B. It's just not something that is known because, of course, all of this stuff is of people's knowledge now. So if you want to ask a question about Windows 11, it's going to do just fine. But, you want to talk about a radio station we listened to in 1961, forget about it. So,
it's hard to find that info.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Well, I just realized we ran out of time. Call me tomorrow night.
Oh, I will.
Okay, thanks. I look forward to it. Thanks. All right. And likewise to Victor and to James, apologies. But call early tomorrow night. We got 3 big hours to spend together. Until then, that's a wrap. We thank Adam for keeping us on the air and John for screening your calls. But above all, I thank you for calling. Makes the show a pleasure to do. Hope to talk to you tomorrow night on WGN Radio.
Flop, cop, drop, plus the parent slap, and rescue swine 1-1. I'm Grant Marshall, 2020 News, real stories, real fun. Sergeant Stinko, an off-duty cop, walks into a bar in New Smyrna Beach, Florida, and happy hour turns into slappy glower. For some reason, the said-to-be sauced sheriff sergeant tangles with an old couple. Hood cop, cad cop starts beating on the lady, the sheriff's department says. Her elderly hubby jumps in. Then another guy subdues Stunk and Disorderly. Sergeant Pickled Pepper's under arrest and off to rehab. His sheriff calling sloppy Sarge's behavior idiotic. His career kaput. Fed up. Kids run free. Shut up. Sit down. Snarls a restaurant owner in the Bay Area, where brats in the cradle are wreaking havoc, says Cranky and our gang. Tiny Loon adventures include kids smashing stuff, trashing the joint, even parents changing diapers on common tables. We're not Chuck E. Cheese, blurts the beleaguered boss who's posted a please control your children warning on his menu and fined fairly flawed errants for property damage. Parents do the darndest things. Schlep a pig. There goes the Baberhood. Alligators, schmalligators. A small beach town on Florida's Atlantic coast is turning into a preposterously putrid pigsty. A feral hog invasion has torn up yards like the Battle of the Sludge. Muckety mucks have corralled some 50 roly-poly porkers, but hog hell rages on in Green Acres. Fences can't even begin to impede the invasion of porky pigs. The landscaping bills just plain stink, and piggies aplenty on the prowl persist to plague the place. And that's what's happening. I'm Grant Marshall, 2020 News.